Welcome to But Jesus Drank Wine
and Other Stories That Kept Us Stuck. I'm Mead.
And I'm Christy.
And in this podcast, we'll explore the stories that kept us, well, stuck, wanting to drink and not wanting to drink all at the same time.
Join us as we show you that freedom from alcohol does not have to mean a life sentence of misery and missing out,
but actually means living an authentic life full of peace, joy, and purpose.
Happy Monday, or whatever day that you listen to this podcast. We are so incredibly blessed to welcome our brand new friend, even though I feel like I know her because I stalk her on the gram, Kelly Collier, on the podcast. She's the founder of the international women's organization, Broken Crayons Still Color. I love it so much. She helps women process through brokenness and get into healing and hope, which is obviously what we're all about here. She is a speaker, the author of the book Brave Enough to be Broken, which is so, so good. Host of the Still Coloring podcast. And she has a children's book, Broken Crayons Still Color. Welcome, Tony. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Get so excited. Go deep or go home.
Yes. So for the people that don't know you, give us your little story. And please, please, please include the Psalm 91.
Oh, gosh. That's going to be a long introduction. Okay, I'll try to make it short. Long story short, the first and best thing that you need to know about me is that I'm from Houston, Texas. Texas all day, okay? I do live in Atlanta, Georgia, unfortunately. No, just kidding. I've been here for like 14 years. I should claim it, but I ain't, because Texas all day. I grew up in a blended family. Had a really difficult childhood. When I was 7, I was exposed to pornography. 8 and 9, I was sexually manipulated by older cousins. My mom got really sick when I was 8. She had a massive stroke and she was paralyzed on her left side. And I became like a tiny little caregiver. My counselor calls it parentification. It's like when you become the parent and you just kind of lose pieces of your childhood. And so those types of like dark little things were all over my story. But, you know, there was just kind of this like balance of me trying to be like a healthy, thriving kid that made my dad proud and also being a little ratchet and a little wild, if we're just going to be honest. Because what happens when you're in pain as a kid is you survive for as long as you can and then you start numbing and coping. And so at 13, I started twerking, popping, drinking, smoking, sexing, all the things. I lost my virginity at 13 to a much older guy. I ended up leaving my parents' house at 16 and putting myself through college because I was always a go-getter, always looking to make my dad proud. Unfortunately, he was an alcoholic and very verbally abusive. And so I never got that validation from my dad as a little girl, as a teenager. And so I looked for it in the boys and bottles. Okay, lots of bottles. But I put myself through college. I was supposed to go to law school, but really just like partied so hard in college. You want to talk about getting loose? Half of college, I actually don't remember, but that's okay, right? Because when I was 21, I met Jesus for the first time and joined a church, moved to Georgia and thought like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, this is my redemption story. I'm saved now. But the truth is I was a fan of God, not a follower of God, you know, like worshiping on Sundays, but like still a little wild on the weekends. I'd also gotten married super young at 20, and that marriage turned out to be very toxic and abusive. I had a little girl in that marriage, ended up getting divorced when she was just 1 year old. And then I went on this journey to like, shoot, like, God, listen, I'm at the bottom, bro. Like, I am in the valleys. You're going to have to show your face out here. And I really started to pursue him. And I bet God had like this little smile on his face, because he was like, this is what I've actually wanted all along. For you to get to a place where you're so desperate for me that you will actually become a follower of me and not just a fan. And I did. And that's where the Psalm 91 story comes from. I started like asking the Lord to speak to me, going deep. I used to go to like those weird prophetic miracle services, which I don't think is weird anymore. But I was like, I was like, I'm going to hear the voice of God out here. And I remember going to one of these services and there was this guy, I'll never forget his name, Deacon Robert. Okay. And he comes up to me and he prophesies over me and says, you should read the Psalm of your birth year, Psalm 91. And I go home and it literally means nothing to me at all. And I'm like, well, that's unfortunate. Well, then I go to a spiritual encounter like for a week and really started pressing into the voice of God. And God brings the scripture back to me. And through just this crazy course of events, me asking the Lord to give me like a vision of how he sees me, which was like me frolicking in a field, which is totally me as a Teletubby, which is who I actually want to be in my afterlife. There ain't no afterlife, guys. Just kidding. We're going to be in heaven worshiping our daddy God. Anyways.
We're a Teletubby in heaven. It could happen.
But maybe I will be a Teletubby. Maybe. Oh my God, turn me purple. Periwinkle, please. And so I have these like visions of me like frolicking in this field, and I start writing all this down. I still have the journal to this day. Sometimes I go back to it to just remind myself that God is coming for us, that he is wanting to speak to us, and that there are these little God winks. I go back home after the spiritual encounter. I reread Psalm 91, and it is quite literally about protection and safety and being in a big old field and angel armies coming after you and lions and snakes coming after you, but being totally and completely protected by God. And that's been the through line of my story. It's realizing that, yeah, I've gone through some really dark things, and there's been really hard, dark parts of my story, even as a little girl, which is so freaking unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And yet God's always been protecting me, always coming after me, always being with me. And that's where everything came from. The podcast, the books, the broken crayons still color. It's like we are broken and fragile and imperfect, but we're still so worthy of love and belonging. And not only that, but we can still do really great things and create beauty in the world. So there y'all go.
Amen.
Yeah, see it right in there.
That's a wrap. Amen. I remember listening to you on a podcast and literally stopping with the dog when you said, you know, I was a fan, not a follower. And I was like, holy guacamole, that was me too. And I know it was me too. I'm just speaking for you now. Like and God just used all the things that we had to go through to get us to the point to realize that, right?
Yep.
That we were just fangirling, not following.
And fangirling. Yeah.
Can you really quickly tell the anecdote of where Broken Crayons came from with Dylan and the Naked Crayons really quick? Because I love it.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, we were processing through this divorce. I was single mom trying to figure things out. And I remember like Dylan, I say taking a liking because I don't really know the other phrase because I'm country, but she started to enjoy, I'm assuming is how you say it in
regular terms.
Started to enjoy coloring like a lot. And she's still like such a beautiful little artist. And I remember getting her like the 64 box of crayons and setting her all up in the living room. And I was like, you're just cute, do your thing, you little Picasso. You're going to take your mom to Paris one day, dang it. And long story short, she wasn't the little Picasso because she broke all these freaking crayons and took all their little clothes off. They were naked. Their dignity was gone. It was crazy. She colored on my wall. I mean, it was a whole situation. And she was just like sitting in the living room on her stomach, like coloring like nothing had even happened with all of this around her. And that night, I had to prep a sermon. I was walking through divorce. I was transitioning out of a really hard church. And I had to speak to a group of like 200 middle schoolers for FCA. And I was like, Lord, you're going to have to write this message because I ain't got nothing for you. Like, I just don't have it. And I'm scrolling on Instagram and I just literally scroll past this graphic. It says broken crayon still color. I screenshot it. It's so blurry. And I put it into a slide deck. And I just felt the Lord give me the scripture, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. I write this talk. I go give it to these middle schoolers while I'm snot crying and grieving over my marriage and my life. And it was one of the most powerful messages I'd ever given. And I think it was because I've been operating as a youth pastor for years and years off of my own gifts and talents. For the first time, I was so crushed and so at the bottom that it had to be God to do it. And from there, my whole life changed. Like somebody invited me to their women's conference. There was a mom in the crowd at this middle school and she was like, can you come and do that talk here? And can you? And it just like blew up and people were like, you need to do a blog. You need to write a book. You need to do a thing. And now we've got like a kid's book, Broken Crayon, Still Color, that sold almost 40,000 units, like not even but a year. I mean, it's just been crazy, bro. Like, it's amazing. And I'm still just excited about what God's going to do with this message and how he's going to carry it. It's great.
Yeah, I love that so much.
Uh-huh.
And I know, again, here comes the stalking, but like, I know Dylan got baptized, right? Was that the last weekend? And you posted a picture.
How old is Dylan?
Dylan, my daughter is 9 years old. We call her our 9-year-old strong will blessing because she's a little wild. And that story happened when she was just one, like 8 years ago, which is
I have a 9-year-old. Yeah. Wow.
Insane.
And didn't her dad come and like was there? And when I saw that picture, I was like,
y'all.
Because you ever imagine?
It's like yes and no.
Yeah.
8 years ago, no, I couldn't imagine. 5 years ago, no, I couldn't imagine. Now, I know God is in the business of redemption.
Yeah.
And so we've got this, you know, relationship that I was in, very toxic, very verbally abusive, doors ripped off the hinges, holes punched in the walls. Like, it just was not good. We were both so young and naive and wild. And we get a divorce. We have this one-year-old. We're doing our best to co-parent through anger and through unhealth. And I'm going to counseling, trying to get healthy and all the things, to the point where our visitation was set up to where one person had to just drop the kid off to school and the other one picked them up because we literally could not be in the same vicinity. Like, it just was not good. And fast forward to this past weekend, and our daughter's getting baptized. He's there. His dad is there. His new wife is there with his sweet little daughter, Marley. And my new son is there. And Marley and Sammy, my son, are like worshiping together at the church. We're sitting at the same table. We have this moment after the baptism where they're like, all the families get together and pray. And so I start praying. I'm like the resident preacher of the family, you know, and I put my hand on Dylan's forehead and my other hand on her back. And I feel this like other hand come on her back too. And it's her dad. And I pray. And then I just told the Lord, say like he needs to pray too. And I just like tap his hand, which I don't even touch this. I mean, like, we just don't do life together like that. And he starts praying, and I'll never forget. He was like, Heavenly Father, like, watch over Dylan. And we're weeping. My daughter's weeping. I'm weeping. And it's just the tangible representation of who God is. He's not leaving anything undone. He's coming after every crevice. He's coming to redeem and make whole every single thing, even when you don't even need it. I mean, he's fine. He's remarried. I'm remarried, redivorced all over again, but grateful for my single, you know, season. And we didn't really need that moment. And God was like, oh, but I'm going to give you abundantly more, even in the hard things. And it's just beautiful. You just can't make this stuff up. It's just like, it's God, y'all. He doing his thing.
No, I love it. I'm crying. I love it so much. I love it. So so good. It's so good.
So I had seen, we're just stalking, right? You had posted something, soft as the new strong. A friend, I think, sent that to you. And I would love if you could expand on that, because that was one of those, I'm not on social media a whole lot. It's not my thing. But every once in a while, I'll see something and I'm like, wait, what is that? And why is that speaking to me? And yes, that was a message that I've been receiving, but not with those words. And I love it so much.
Well, I just think, like, especially for our generation and beyond, like, we just have abused this whole strong thing. Like, I just keep, at this point, I'm like, if anyone tells me to be strong one more time, I'm going to kick them in the neck. You know? I have been strong my whole life.
Yeah.
I've had to be the daughter that took care of my mother because my brothers were out partying and doing whatever they did. I've had to be strong in the face of my dad not being proud of me as a little girl and that being the one thing that I always wanted. I had to be strong for my friends, for situations, for school, just so many things. And I got to the point where I was like, I just don't even know if this is biblical. I don't know if our humanly strength and the glorification around it is actually biblical. And if we really want to dive into it, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 quite literally says that God's power is made strongest and complete in our weakness. Mm-hmm. The Apostle Paul says, therefore, I'll boast all the more gladly about my weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Not my strength, not the things that I've done. And Paul did so much for the kingdom, spread the gospel to so many places, planted so many churches. And that's just not where the good stuff is found, in us pretending to be strong, wearing the capes. I want to spend the rest of my life pointing out my inadequacies to the point where it's almost self-deprecating. Okay. Because the more that I expose my weakness, the bigger God gets.
Yes.
The more people realize that the same God that could work through my crazy behind could surely do something in their life too. If they know that I battled with drugs and alcohol and promiscuity and lust and divorce twice and God's still using me, then I know somebody out there is like, oh, well, shoot, he can do it through me too. And that, I think, is our goal, not strength. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be strong, dang it. I'm trying to live the soft life. I'd already been through so much. And if the Lord want to bring me through more, like, I'm not even, like, sure, God, like, I will stand in the valleys. I'll be in the trenches. If my preference would be maybe a few soft years, actually, with if you're listening, Lord. But that's what I want. And it's been beautiful because people are like, yeah, that's what I want too. And it's been cool to watch.
Yeah. I love that so much. I love it so much. Let's talk about hiding being the kryptonite to healing. Because we love community. And here's my 2 second plug for our recently opened But Jesus Drank Wine community, which we just launched. It's just so great to be in community with all these women. So talk to us about it.
Oh, man. I have been thriving in community. I mean, we mentioned a little bit, like I have a confessional community. It's 7 of us women. We're all kind of in ministry or leadership or owning businesses or whatever the case is, nonprofits. And we meet every single month for 3 hours and we confess. Like, it's not that cute little Bible study. Let's read Colossians. It ain't none of that. This is like, what were your thoughts? What were you tempted with? What did you do wrong? What are you grieving? What are you longing for? Like, we're going super deep. And so it's been great for me specifically because I remember when I got one of the most devastating calls ever, September 19th. And I knew that at that point I had to end my marriage because it was no longer God honoring. And 2 of my confessional community team members of girls were down the hallway. I was in Nashville. We were filming a show the day before. We just also happened to be in the same hotel. And I had stayed in my marriage for years and years and years with betrayal and lies and all the things because I just didn't feel worthy enough to leave. And I believe in redemption. And at this point, it had gotten to a point where it was like, okay, you're not going to change. And I remember calling these 2 girls, Jamie and Jessica, and I'm like, I just got some of the most devastating news in my life. And like, I need you. And they immediately came, comforted me. The fact that God would allow for them to be moments down the hallway in and of itself is a miracle. And I remember being in my friend Jamie's arms and saying, like, I have to leave, right? Like, I can't stay in the marriage, right? Like, right? And she just was like, if you stayed, I'd be concerned. And it's not that we're giving a free pass to divorce out here, but it is to say, like, Tony, you're worth more. God does not want this. This is not his design. And that's what community is. They're like Jesus with skin on. They're with you in the room. They don't leave. They remind you, healthy, good Christian community. They remind you of who you are. And they help make decisions for you when you can't make them for yourself and your family. And it has changed me. And the truth is, we are seeing pastors fall left and mother freaking right because they have no accountability because they're hiding. And we all are so shocked, right? Like when it happens, when the announcement is posted, when the TMZ or the Christian Today people post the blog about this pastor's an alcoholic, infidelity, prostitutes, whatever it was, we're so shocked because they've been hiding.
Yeah.
For so long. And I just think that if we don't get good coming out of hiding, God, in my personal opinion, in this season is cleaning house. He is exposing what needs to be exposed. So, baby, if you are hiding anything right now, get it out into the light because the enemy wants nothing more than for shame to defeat us because that's why we're hiding. We're just so freaking ashamed. Me, I left shame in 2020, that 1 year where we almost lost the entire world. Like, I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care what any of you suckers think, actually. I don't. Because when I meet my maker, it's going to be me and him only. Not you, judgmental whippersnappers. And so I can say everything. I can expose everything because I just don't care. Cancel me, dang it. Like, whatever. I'm not going to hide because I know that's where sin festers. That's where darkness festers. I'm going to get into the light. And I just believe everybody should.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's like Dr. Kirk Thompson says, he's like, we don't do vulnerable. We are vulnerable. Like, that's how God created us. And so we have all of these masks, alcohol, all the things we talk a lot about alcohol in this space. Yeah. Like, we have these things that keep us from really truly being known and being our vulnerable selves, which just gives power to darkness, which just keeps us not in a place of being able to be in community and be honest and real and show up as how he's created us and with people who like that story and how they came for you. And also they want you to go somewhere better than where you are. They're not going to leave you there too. And I think that is just so, that's what I've learned from
Dr. Gerda Dobson, but it's so powerful in healing our stories and I mean to use your phrase, but taking broken crayons and still making beautiful pictures. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's good.
So good.
One of the questions that Mead and I get asked all the time is like, how long does this take? Right. And let's talk a little bit. Yeah. Because I know you talk about this in the book too, is that like everybody's, and it's such, sometimes I feel like for me, it feels like a throwaway comment at this point. It's like everyone's journey takes time, and Mead and I are sick and tired of the word journey as well. But talk about the fact that everyone's journey takes what they take. God's timing is perfect. And yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, at the end of the day, fam, like we won't arrive in this context. Like none of us are going to arrive to completely heal or whole in this context, because we live in a fallen, broken world. It's going to be fallen and broken. It's not going to change.
Yeah.
Until we meet our maker. And I feel like that just like relieves so much of the stress. It's just like, okay, I'm on a healing path. I'm like doing the best I can. I am just doing it. And it's probably going to suck some more in the near future, right? Like, or in the far future. And so I think a good litmus test that I've been using at least is I don't necessarily need to be 100% heal and 100% whole, but I at least want to be hopeful.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's kind of like the litmus test. I think that's the, if we are going to say that's where you arrive, that's where you arrive. Because there are areas in my life right now that I'm still bitter about, that I'm still angry about, that I still want to slash some tires about. Hello, somebody. I'm like, I really just want to do like the waiting to exhale, burn everything down type thing. Like I still got that in me. I'm clearly not hopeful about that. And so I'm not going to lead from that place. I'm not going to speak on that place because I'm not hopeful. But there are some areas in my life, like my worth, my self-worth, the belief that I had as a little girl and even as a teenager and a young adult that I needed a man to be worthy, that I wasn't worthy if I didn't have someone on my arm. And that's just simply not true. I'm at a place now where I'm like, no, I could be single for the rest of my life. And I'm hopeful about that. I'm hopeful about discovering myself, about having a selfish season, about just being sprawled out, butt naked in my bed, in the middle of it, instead of choosing a side. I'm like, oh, I just love it. And so I can speak to singles now because I'm like, no, those parts of me haven't healed, but they're at hopeful places. They're not 100% healed. They'll never be until I meet Daddy God, but they're super hopeful. And I think that's just maybe a new goal for us, y'all. Like as we're on the healing journey, quotation marks, maybe it's not like I'm all done. But it's like, at least I'm hopeful. And hope is really just a belief that things can and will get better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's enough.
Yeah. I actually circled that in the book, The Hope Posture, because I actually really, we talk about coming from a place of positive emotion all the time, and that this is work that we've yet to do and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I love that so much, the hope posture. I like to kind of toss out positive emotion and start using that. Mm-hmm. I love it so much.
Responding to the heartfelt requests from you, our wonderful, wonderful listeners, for a deeper sense of community, we are so excited to introduce y'all to the But Jesus Drink Wine community.
Get ready to be part of an exclusive experience where you'll join a sisterhood of kindred spirits on a transformative journey of faith, sobriety, and personal growth.
You'll gain access to our private community, a place where deep connections can flourish among women who share your aspirations of strengthening faith in Christ and breaking free from alcohol.
But wait, there's more. We'll host regular connection calls to facilitate fellowship with like-minded gals, no matter where you stand on your alcohol or faith journey. Whether you're seasoned or just curious, you are very warmly welcomed here.
Prepare to be inspired by guest expert sessions and engaging Q&As that explore the essential topics for your sobriety, faith, and holistic wellness journey.
Don't miss out on securing your spot. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
We can't wait to see your beautiful face in the But Jesus Drank Wine community.
Let's talk about gratitude too, because that's another,
That thought, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Gratitude and the whack-a-mole thing. You love that.
You like that?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, here's what this is great because this past season, I've had more gratitude, I think, than I ever had, which is, 2 years removed from writing that book. And I'm still on this, beautiful, journey. Hello. to discovering that grief and gratitude can coexist.
Yep.
That we can be so sorrowful. Like, I just remember on my new podcast season, I'm going to talk about this, but I just remember one of the most devastating things about walking through divorce this last time was leaving my house. Like, I really liked our house. Like, I picked it out. I painted my little boy's room. Like, I didn't paint it. My best friend painted it, but I did pick out the colors. But his nursery had like this beautiful, like, forest green wall. And I put like one of those light fixtures in there. I never had like a fancy light fixture before, you know? And it just was so beautiful. And I was like, I'm going to have to leave this home. Like, it just was, it did not make sense for me to stay. My ex-husband was like coming back and forth. It was weird. The kids were unstable. I needed to get into a safe place. And so I got this new house. And I remember the last night I was there, it was me, my kiddos were there. And then my mom came from Texas, and I have an au pair that lives with me from Brazil to help with the kids when I travel. And I remember taking my son's ultrasound off of his wall. I always had like those little ultrasound pictures or whatever, sonogram, next to his wall. And that was like one of the final things, I guess, that was still just up. And I just remember taking it out. And it just was so mad. I was so mad. I was like, this sucks. Like, I have to uproot my kids, you know? And it's crazy because at the same time, I'm grieving that I have to leave my house. And the next day we get up in the morning and I walk into my new house and all of my friends are there. Like, they're like putting together beds, and I couldn't afford furniture, so they put together this like Amazon wish list for us. And someone's bought my friend Jackie O'Berry, actually, she bought my entire daughter's room, and my new room is stunning. It's like my landlord remodeled the whole thing before he moved in, and it's just so beautiful. We have like a family bathroom now where me and the kids share a bathroom, and it's so beautiful. My confessional community made it so pretty for me, and I'm just standing in this house, and I'm like, how could I be crying tears of straight up like grief? Like, I'm so angry that I have to leave my home. And yet I'm so grateful that I have an entire community that have come together and created a brand new home for me and my kids. But it's because grief and gratitude can coexist, and God is strong enough for us to be pissed and to be so present in our gratitude. He is strong enough to handle that and hold that. And I think like, that's just what we have to get good at. And I think like society has stolen our permission to be really, really sad. And really, really kind of happy. Like, it's weird. It's like, no, if you're going to be sad, like, you got to cry. Like, you got to cry. You got to stay there. But it's like, we're not a monolithic people. We don't feel monolithically. That's not even how we're wired. Actually, like, the same neurons that process pain are the same exact ones that joy is passing through as well. Like, it's the same system. And so I just think we have to get really good at giving ourselves permission to be grieved and so grateful for what we have. Because sometimes I think it is the gratitude that pulls us through the grief. It really is. So those are my thoughts on gratitude and stuff.
That's so good. So that's so good.
Because I'm sobbing over here.
I know. No, I know. Too. Oh my gosh. So good. Well, it's the thought too that like we've been sold, and we talk a lot about this on our podcast with you know, trying to find freedom from alcohol. We've been sold through the marketing messages that we're not supposed to be. You know, we're not supposed to be sad. And if you're not happy, you're doing something wrong. And by the way, it fits along with that whole be strong message. And here's something that we can sell to you to solve that. And so we're not in that place of where we're comfortable being in grief. And therefore, but I love the like the permission that you give us to see that grief is okay, because also that gratitude is a real part of that. There's so many people in the coaching space that we exist in, like the secular world, where it's like, how do I start a gratitude practice? And I'm even just live kind of processing this. I think to get to a gratitude practice, why not start by naming where the grief is? Because that exposes where the gratitude is waiting for us. And so I like that a lot. Too. Thank you for that. So I'm curious about, along those same lines, I mean, with the immediate gratification culture that we live in. And, yeah, you know, we kind of touched on this earlier too, but like kind of being comfortable in the process of like where we are, yeah, is like, we're so focused on that end result, that product that is going to come. People, yeah, come to us and they're like, I just want to be free from alcohol. And it's so focused on just removing the alcohol, yeah, like, and then white knuckling and then being stuck in this place of like,
yeah,
and whereas the way we go, it's like, settle into the process of untangling, yeah, all these stories that have led you to believe that this is your relief, this is your, you know, and all, yeah, of that. And so I've heard you talk about this on another podcast, but just that idea of like the process, yeah, being, if we can kind of like settle into, yeah, that. I mean, yeah.
Well, here's what's, so I have two things. Here's what's great. I knew that I had to stop drinking in this last season. So if just, since we're just going to talk about alcohol here, guys, I want to say it because I feel like I have the authority to speak about it because I've done it wrong. And so in this season, finally, I feel like I got it right. And I was like, look at me go. Drugs, alcohol, it's all part of my past. Well, this go round, I was grieving super hard. And I remember I got like my little Bella Gloss, little wine, little Pinot Noir. And I got it in the Instacart and I had one little glass in October. And the next thing you know, I had two glasses a night, and then she was in every Instacart order. And I was like, I could down a whole bottle. And I did. And I remember being so convicted, not in a shameful way. Conviction doesn't have to be that at all. But the Lord was just like, hey, sweet girl, you already got a drink maximum. Okay. Like, you already ain't supposed to be out here drinking more than one glass. And now you're going a little too far. And so I remember I called my friend Deborah Filetta and I was like, hey, can you be my accountability when it comes to like alcohol in this season? I really want to grieve well. I want to process this well. I'm a single mom now for real. And I really want to show up well for my kids. And she's like, all right. She's like, all right, that cold turkey. And I said, hey, oh my gosh, it was so hard. I stopped sleeping well. I was like, oh, this sucks, because I was essentially like using it to numb, using it to sleep, using it to like freaking be able to wake up in the morning. And it just sucked for a while there. And I remember in December, it was New Year's Eve, and I was like, I'm going to help my friends. I could just have like one drink. And it's a drink I've had before. Like, it's all good, right? Y'all, I sipped this drink and nearly threw up. My body had completely rejected it. And yep, I was like, if that ain't the Lord, I don't know what is. And I remember, you know, texting Deborah and I was like, hey, I just want you to know I had a drink. Like, I didn't finish it because I felt terrible. But I want you to know, like, I made this misstep and there was grace there. And you know what she asked me first? She goes, why do you think you had it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Phyllis was drinking and it was New Year's Eve. And why do you think, yep, you had it, Tony? And I was started to process deeply. And I said, I didn't want to enter a New Year's sick. I didn't want that. I wanted to see January 1st, like, with joy and with a good night's rest. And so I want someone to know, like, I get it. Like, dang, it's hard. We want to numb because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it doesn't make us better. It just doesn't. It's easier in the moment and it doesn't make us better every single freaking time. And as someone who preaches this and leans into this and is just honest about my own struggles, like, I'm just telling you, I've seen it. I've done it. I have the authority to speak into it. And the other side of our ability to say, I'm going to sit in this pain and I have two choices. I either numb or I trust that God's not going to let the pain crush me. And he just won't. Sometimes it's really about trusting who he is.
Yeah.
It's just like, is he going to protect me? Mm-hmm. Is this going to crush me? But that's why we put community around us, because it's not the grief sometimes. It's not the pain. It's not the temptation. It's not the addiction that'll take us out. It's trying to fight it alone that will.
Yeah.
We got to let him in.
Thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to be honest out here, y'all. What are we doing if, you know?
100%. We're open books over here.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, yeah. I don't hear about all that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
People want honesty. Yeah. It's like, here you go. We're in perfect, yeah, surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I think both Mead and I, when we were first starting our own paths to living alcohol-free, like, I didn't know any other human that didn't drink, right? Mm-hmm. And
And we were all just covering it up of how much it was, you know, affecting our individual lives, at least over here in my circle. So can you talk a little bit about how, when you are in those places, when you are numbing and you are feeling broken, turning to the wrong things, how you end up, because I love this so much, leaking all over people, because I relate, hard relate to when I was in the depths of my drinking, leaking all over this family that lives here.
At the end of the day, here's what I love so much about like the Bible and stuff. There is a blueprint, fam. You know what I'm saying? Like there's
A
cheat sheet.
You know, like there's a blueprint here. There's a structure. There's a strategy. And I just think we don't want to abide by that. Like, I just think it's easier for us to choose the things that our flesh really desires. But when we're in pain, Jackie Hill Perry said this on my podcast, when we're in pain is when, like, is when our idols come out, first of all. When we choose something to ease the pain outside of God, that is our idol.
Yep.
Like, that's, it is what it is.
Yep.
And the design and blueprint of God was for us to live freely, but naked, in the garden with him. And we didn't need anything else. We didn't need anything else but him. Adam and Eve did not need the fruit from the tree of knowledge. They had everything that they needed in God. I just feel like our bodies are longing to get back to that. That's the North Star, is to be at a place where you genuinely do not need anything to numb your pain, your despair, your betrayal, your abandonment, but God.
Yeah.
And it's easier said than done because we're flesh and bones. And we live in a dark and broken world, so we cannot forget that. We literally have opposition against us.
Yep.
So what we're going to have to do is live on the offense, not the defense. I think for many of us, it's the way for us not to leak all over our family and friends by lashing out because we didn't have one too many, or waking up groggy and hungover and you can't take care of your goddamn kids. Like, the way to avoid those things is for us to remember that our bodies, like our good bodies that God made, are all longing for connection with something greater than us. It's really a someone greater than us. And living on the offense is, I'm going to stay consistent with my relationship with God. It may not be every morning, because sometimes these kids wake up early and it's crazy, okay? Or we're out of town, or we're on vacation, or we just had a long night and we're tired. But consistently meeting with our Heavenly Father, it is going to be in us deciding that, hey, maybe I do need a little bit more help with my mental and emotional capacity, so I'm going to have to get a counselor and a therapist. Maybe that's going to the gym, getting outdoors, taking care of your physical body so that it's not craving unhealthy things because you haven't put healthy things in it on the front end. It's offense living. It's how can I get ahead of this? How can I have something in the reserve to when life hits me in the face, I got a little something, a little cushion to catch me when I fall so I can bounce back up and get back in the game.
Yeah.
And I just think we're just too much on the defense, man. Like we're just catching it as we leak. And it's like, okay, get ahead of this stuff. And that's what's been super helpful to me. It's like, I'm going to phone a friend and get some accountability popping here so that when temptation comes, because I know myself, it'll come and I have an addictive personality. It is what it is. I have something to fall back on. I've got some cushion.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah, we talk a lot about staying above your 50% line, you know, figuring out like what are those things that you need to do physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, so that you're above 50%, so that when temptation comes, when the urges come, whatever they may be, you have that ability to pause and then choose a different way versus just reflexively hit that easy button escape. So I love that picture you painted for us. That's so good.
Because we be making mistakes like below the 50. That's where it happens.
Yeah.
That is, we're burnt out. We're tired.
If
we're hopeless. That's good. I like that.
But it has to be so, it's so intentional, right? And it's living by intent. And I've had this conversation several times this week about with women creating space, because they feel like the only space and the only thing for them and their only break is the bottle of wine at the end of the day, right? So it's about going back and being intentional and even just like putting it actually physically in your calendar of like, you know, I coach Christian and non-Christian women. Sometimes it's just, you know, going for a walk or something.
Yeah.
And And so, yeah. And I love that ends up being what we end up then coaching. I love when I get to the point when it's like, this actually has nothing to do with alcohol at all whatsoever. It's about Yeah. It's about that's living with intention so we don't have to dumb out and we don't have to. Yeah. So good.
Love it.
So good. Talk to us a little bit about God's heart towards addiction.
Oh, that's really good. You know, because I grew up with my father who was an alcoholic and my brothers were on drugs and meth and PCP. I mean, gosh, addiction was all throughout my family. I really had a disdain for it. I had a little chip on my shoulder for them suckers because I felt like they had taken so much from me as a little girl. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered that God is always after the one.
Mm-hmm.
He is always leaving the 99 to chase after the one who's in the wilderness, who is gripped by their idols, because I really do believe that that's what addiction is. I'm in pain when I have something happening with me, the thing that I go to numb and to take care of it instead of God is the idol. And I just, you know, I had to get to a point where my heart was broken, you know, truly.
Yeah.
And then I myself battled with addiction, right? Like in all kinds of ways. I had an eating disorder in college, bulimia. I was on all kinds of weed and eggs and alcohol. I mean, so much beer, so much beer. God, I know that my stomach is still messed up because of all that beer, I tell you. And then I became it. And that's when the empathy grew and the compassion grew. And that's when I understood fully that God had been coming after my dad. He'd been coming after my brothers. He'd been coming after anyone that I had experienced that had an addiction of any kind. And I think that's what I want to preach and talk about for the rest of my life. I actually visit a shelter every month here in Atlanta for women that have had addiction, trafficking, prison, whatever the case is. And I went yesterday and I'm looking these women in the eyes and, you know, one's like, I, you know, got on drugs and we have confessional time. And so I got on drugs and the other day I was so tempted. I almost spent my rent money on da 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 da. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, God loves you so much. Oh my goodness. He's so jealous of you. Like he wants the space that the addiction is taking so bad.
Mm.
He really, really wants it. And it just, that's where I'm at. I just think he's longing to fill the space that the addiction is taking.
Yeah.
And I also think that's just real good news.
Yeah.
That we have a God like that who's coming for her and who's saying, girl, save your rent money. I've got something better for you. Well, yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I could listen to you, I mean, share all day long. I mean, seriously. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Christy, do we have to hit Tiny Tina Town?
We have to leave.
We have to come to our Tiny Tina Town,
Tony.
Tony, do you have a Tiny Tina? I did it.
All right. So I operate on what's called a replenishment cycle. So we talked a little bit about that whole living on the offense, not the defense, living above the 50, all that. And I need that. Like I'm dramatic. Something happens. I'm like, death. We're dying. We're all dying. Like I'm a wild girl. You know what I'm saying? And a replenishment cycle has been very good for me. I learned it at Tom Patterson Institute doing a life plan. And it's simply these little bitty things that give you life. That is just yours to keep. Like for me, my little bitty things are getting my hair done. I just love it when my edges are laid down and I'm looking cute. Getting my nails done. And I love nature. That's like super big for me. But it's a little thing. It's like taking a walk outside, like, right? And so the replenishment cycle is simply you writing those things down that you just really love that make you feel so good about yourself. But that's not the key. The key is to do it consistently, which is hard for me. Consistency has been one of my words for the year. It's figuring out the cadence that you need them. I need to go out in nature at least twice a week. Learn that during COVID. Surprise. At least twice a week. I also love to worship. I don't sing real good, but I can hit a note every now and again. And I like to worship almost every day. We have worship going on in our house all the time. Those little bitty things that are just so tiny and sweet to me really just like fill my tank up. And when I'm having an off week, I look at my little checklist and I'm like, we haven't gone outside. Your hair is looking crusty. Your nails are too long. It's dirt all up under your stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And so my challenge to you this week is maybe to name two and then to figure out how often you need to do them in the week and get on a cadence.
Nailed it.
Love it.
Nailed it. Look at you. See?
That's
nailed it.
Tiny Tina ever.
That's so good.
We've got it, girls and boys.
Can you please tell the people, the ladies, and after David, our one male listener, just kidding.
Where is my husband? That's in the car. Okay.
And actually,
three male listeners, our two husbands. And
okay.
Where to find you?
Yeah, it's Toni Collier on everything. So TONIJCOLLIER on the Instagreezy website, Still Coloring Podcast. I have a brand new season coming out. It's my most vulnerable season. I was listening to it before this podcast and I was like, I told all of my business so hard. I just told it so hard. And then my book on healing, Brave Enough to Be Broken. It's so good. It's a roadmap. It's not like a telling my story type thing. It's a little bit of story here and there, but more so it's like practical step to taking to at least starting the healing journey. So
yeah, we'll link it all and we will link it all in the show notes. Go read it, you guys. It's so good.
So good. Thank you for blessing us with your time and our listeners. Thank you, Toni, so much.
Thank you.
That was so fun.
Bye.
Hi, friend. We have a really fun raffle for you for April, May, and June. If you leave us a review on either Apple or Spotify, take a quick screenshot of it and email it over to us at hello@butjesusdrinkwine.com. We will enter you into the draw to win 3 free months in our community. And we're really excited about getting this podcast into the ears of women like you. And so thank you for your help. Thank you so much for joining us again this week. You can find all of our episodes at butjesusdrinkwine.com and be sure to follow us over on Instagram, Love Life Sober, and I'm Not Sober, I'm Free.
To learn more about what we do, you can visit our websites, meethollandshirley.com and lovelifesober.com.
Take a screenshot of this podcast and share it with a friend or two.
And don't forget to subscribe to our pod so you don't have to worry about missing a single episode. And if you love what we're doing, please leave us a review on Apple and Spotify.
This helps more women who are feeling stuck and alone in the overdrinking cycle find hope and encouragement.
Thanks, ladies. We so appreciate you. And we'll see you next Monday.